to Maxed Out Man, helping you become the man you were made to be.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Man podcast. This is episode number 36. I'm with Marcus Ogden. Marcus is a former NFL player, and he is now an inspirational keynote speaker across the world, three-time best-selling author, and he hosts a podcast, Get Authentic with Marcus Ogden. Marcus, I appreciate you taking the time to be here. Had a little bit of technical snafu, just be full disclosure on that. So I appreciate you kind of bearing with me on that. After all these podcasts, you think I'd know better what I'm doing, but we're all just kind of making this up as we go along, at least on my side. So Marcus, thanks for being here. I appreciate you. Tell us, kind of give us your background, what it is that you do, how you got there, and kind of what your goal is with all of this in that you do.
Yeah, so I'm from Washington, D.C. I live in Fuquay, Belina, North Carolina, about a half hour outside of Raleigh. I am divorced recently. I am the father of two beautiful girls, a 19-year-old that is in her sophomore year at NYU, and a 9-year-old. I am a national, international keynote speaker, like a coach, trainer, four-time best-selling author. I am also a brand ambassador, business owner, and also the host of the Get Authentic with Marcus Ogden podcast. We are ranked in the top 1% most popular worldwide. We are almost in the top 0.5% worldwide most popular. But at the end of the day, what I'm really about, Kevin, is helping people know how to take control of their life and be accountable, be responsible, and don't let their ego get in the way from them living what I call a very fulfilled and prosperous life. Because I let my ego get in the way in 2013, and I lost everything, and I crashed and burned in September and April of 2013.
Yeah, so you kind of, and I know from looking at your material for coaching and what you do for consulting, that your main kind of thing is don't make the same mistakes that I made and learn from my failures, which is kind of what I'm trying to do. I've been married for 28 years. I'm 50 years old. And, you know, I have a great amount of success now in my life, what I define as success, but I failed along the way. And I'm hoping for people to avoid that along the way as well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, great teachers are all about sharing with their students, with their followers, with people that they're serving, their mistakes, their journey, their ups and downs to help others not make those mistakes. Now again, we're all human beings. We're going to all make mistakes, plain and simple. But what I try to do is I try to tell people, learn from my mistakes so you don't end up being as catastrophic with your mistakes as I was with mine. When my home was foreclosed on, both cars repossessed in the same day, moved to Raleigh, $4 to my name, fired from two jobs in the same week. I mean, all these things happened to me because my ego got in the way.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about when, before we started recording, we talked about you joining the NFL at 22, right, and kind of how that process happened. How did that ego manifest itself, and kind of what were the, we know the repercussions or kind of the failures and everything you just described, but how did that process happen? What was the catalyst?
Great question, Kevin. So what happened is, as my construction company paid into my enterprises that are having massive success, I became what I call very much focused on external motivating factors. Money, fame, notoriety, women, cars, parties, drinking, all those things. And I lost sight of who I was as a man, a humble man, a grateful man to get to that point. I treat my team correctly, with respect, dignity, and all these other things. But because I got so focused on those external motivating factors, and I got so focused on everybody liking me, wanting to know me, and being big shot, and making all this money, it put me in a spot where my ego, which I had an acronym for that, exaggerated, glorified opinions, literally got bigger than the good part of my soul. And I tell my clients, when your ego gets bigger than the good part of your soul, you are screwed. And that's what happened to me. And again, I have also another saying, if you're not ready to handle success, success will hand you your ass. And that's exactly what it did to me. And I lost everything because my ego got inflated and it was really, really in a place where I just was not know who I needed to be.
Is it kind of like, you know, I just had this vision of, you know, those old cartoons where you got the little, you know, you got the little devil on this shoulder and then little angel on this shoulder. You kind of got ego and the good part of your soul. Is that kind of what you're,
continuum? Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Because, like, as you make more money, your good side should get bigger. And you want to help more people, want to give more. But in my case, the more money I made, the devil got bigger because I was all about me. We call those the personality ethics. Rage, wrath, lust, envy, greed. You have the character ethic. Love, truth, honesty, humanity. As I make more money, the personality ethic, especially greed and self-absorption, took over. As a result of that, Kevin, it put me in a spot where I crashed.
Yeah, because they say about money, right? Money is an amplifier. Money is not a creator necessarily. You know, money, whether if you're kind of a dick and you're a poor one, you're probably going to be a dick if you're a rich one, right? Like, and that's where we start. And what people like yourself are doing is trying to help people take that and learn to more embrace the good part of their soul to overcome sort of our natural, you know, nature that tends to lean more towards what you're saying, greed and lust and all those, right?
Correct. Because what happens is if you're not in a position of realizing where you're headed or heading, then you can't stop yourself. Like me, I had no idea until I was literally broke, almost homeless, out of Baltimore, in Raleigh, that I really got to that point because of my ego. I thought I got to that point because I spent a lot of money on one job and was denied my change order by the developer and the contractor. In reality, it was all the things I did leading up to that, pushing away my best employee, getting in a position where I wasn't helping anybody, being inspired all about themselves, all these things. And as a result, that's how I ended up bankrupt. And of course, the job would have done it eventually, but if I hadn't pushed away my best employees and my best members, maybe I could have been smarter and not spent all that money and not ended up going off the rails, off the wagon.
Yeah, because what you're describing is really being over leveraged, right? Like that's a business term. You're over leveraged financially. You're over leveraged, you know, from a team standpoint, because you had leveraged those team members to a point where they were no longer effective. You know, a lot of people that are listening to this may not be into, you know, multi-million dollar businesses or in the NFL or, you know, any of these kind of major external factors that people can look at and say, oh, that's just a rich guy problem, or that's just a famous guy problem or whatever. But how would you describe it to the average everyday person, how this process can work and what that might look like in their own lives? Because most people that are listening to this probably don't fall, you know, first of all, most people in general don't fall, right?
So here's the thing, right? This works for anybody. Because here's the thing. I started that business, right, from scratch. Like, I didn't inherit it. I didn't, like, say, oh, here is this company. No, we started working as a small concrete contractor. Our first year in business, we did probably about 50 grand, right, at most. So it doesn't matter if it's 8 figures or if it's 50 grand or if it's 10 grand, it doesn't matter, right? The rule of thumb is, this is a great rule by Jack Canfield, be 100% accountable and responsible for your life. No matter what, another great Jack Canfield equation, right? If event plus response equals outcome. Everything in life is an event. Job, relationship, moving here, doing this, trying to lose weight, whatever it is. Everything could be, it's an event, right? But what Jack said is so true. You can control three things when it comes to your response. Your thoughts, your behavior, your images. So what you tell yourself is your thoughts, right? What you can see for yourself are your images. How you act is your behavior. If you can control those three things, you have the best chance to control the outcome. So if you're listening, in life, you're going to always have an event. You're going to always have that main stage opportunity. Doesn't matter how big or small. It could be broad lights on. It could be big bright lights on Broadway. It could be you just working, you know, as a custodian like I did from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m. for $8.25 an hour. Doesn't matter, right? The thing is, when the event comes, how you respond to it through your images, thoughts, and behavior, plus how you are able to carry yourself, can determine your outcome. If you're listening, when the event presents itself, control your thoughts, your images, your behavior. That will give you the best chance with the outcome that you desire.
Do you think that that's something, you know, with the whole ego battle and taking personal responsibility, we do some marriage mentoring and, you know, different things where we work, you know, kind of as lay pastors, lay ministers, and what we see, and one of the difficulties we see, especially with people kind of, I don't know, 30 and under, but I think this is a something we see all over. Do you think this is something that's becoming more and more difficult for people to take that personal responsibility like you're talking about? Or is it like nature versus nurture? You know, because it seems like to me, I'm a 50-year-old old guy, you know, that the more of the younger generation, especially with social media or whatever, is having difficulty with that whole concept.
Right. So I think it's really, really important, right? And it's a whole facet. You said it best, right? At the end of the day, there's so many other factors outside. Social media, you know, everybody wants instant gratification, self-validation, quickly, dating apps, all these things, right? There wasn't that stuff when you would come up. There weren't dating apps. There wasn't social media. There wasn't Twitter or X. There wasn't, you know, Instagram or Facebook or Bumble or Tinder. Like, it wasn't all these things. People had to actually go out and people and network and hand out business cards and go to events and make phone calls, and we finally got the computer, you know, send emails and all these things. You don't have that today. So is it harder? Yes, because it's a much easier world just to get what you want or hear what you want instantaneously. And because of that, I feel a lot of people aren't going to be what I call honest with themselves. Like for me, my marriage, you know, it didn't work out. Is it all my ex's fault? Nope. Not a chance. I wish I would have been better at communication early on. I wish I would have known how to deal with stress, especially financial, as I was trying to go through the bankruptcy and losing everything. I wish I would have gotten better at not talking to people that we knew, right, about problems, you know, and opening things up in my marriage, because, you know, I was scared and I didn't know how to talk to my ex and I didn't know how to communicate, and I would call the people that we both knew and get back to her, that would cause a problem. Mm-hmm. So why was I perfect? Absolutely not. And I own that, right? Now, there's some things that she did that wasn't perfect either, but at the end of the day, here we are, we're divorced, it's fine on November 2nd, and that is the mother of my child. And again, it's no ill will. I mean, it's what it is, right? I've moved on. But again, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, it was all her fault. She did everything wrong. No, I'm not going to say that. That's not the truth. So again, if people have to take that personal accountability and then be personally responsible to their mission of trying to actually be real, be accountable. And I think if you do that, it's going to work. And in my new relationship with my girlfriend, Glenda, you know, we have hard conversations. I was talking to one of my good friends, his daughter's 30. I said, how's it going with her dating that guy? Oh, it's done. Like, you know, after like, you know, 4 days, 5 days, you know, they don't wanna commit, they don't wanna have hard conversations, they wanna move on and go have fun. And he's saying the same thing. In the world today, it's easy to do that. Why? Oh, I don't like, you know, and talk about anything weird. I'm just gonna go on Tinder and swipe right or swipe left. I'm just gonna go on Bumble and say, yeah, let's connect. I mean, because it's easier to do that and to have the hard conversation with somebody and try to actually move past what we call the honeymoon phase into like real relationship. And that's life. So unfortunately, it's not just the age, it's the things around in today's world that I feel make it harder for people to actually say, you know what, I need to be more accountable, I need to be more responsible, and if I'm not hitting my target, How about take, as Aristotle said, I believe what he meant was, take your thumb and point it back at you. Don't take your finger and point it at somebody else.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you're enjoying it and learning a lot. If you're looking for extra help, don't forget that I do offer one-on-one coaching. We can talk through a ton of different issues. I can give you guides, guidelines, and logistical help to help you take that next step or go to that next level in some of the things that you're dealing with in your life. We also have some course content, some guides, and a lot of educational materials over at maxedoutman.com. For the coaching, go ahead and go to maxedoutman.com/coaching, and you can learn about that. And then just go to maxedoutman.com for everything else. Thanks for joining us. Now back to the episode. Yeah, that personal responsibility thing works in both directions. Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote The Five Love Languages, which is a very popular kind of concept, he did a video that we watched, and this is like mid-90s, where he starts talking about he's doing premarital counseling with this young couple, and he asked them, well, how do you guys deal with conflict? And he said they basically look at each other like they have no idea what he's talking about. What do you mean conflict? We're in love. Is there ever going to be conflict? How do we deal? We don't have to deal with that because we're always going to be perfect, right? Everything's going to be great. But he talks about in a relationship, when you have conflict, you each have built brick walls of your own bricks. And he talks about the only thing you can do is to remove the bricks on your side. And then they have to remove the bricks on their side so that then you can begin to be together. So having that personal responsibility, we're talking about it right now with my wife, Michelle. She's dealing with the situation and it's, you know, she kind of had to do some boundary setting and she had to kind of change some of this relationship with this person. And now they're not responding to her. They're kind of ignoring her and kind of doing their own thing. You know, they may be processing it. But I said, hey, all you can do is be responsible for what you put out there in a loving, kind, and responsible way. And you can't be responsible for how they respond to you because she internalizes that. The podcast I listened to was with Trish Kendall, and I know and you guys talked about therapy. And I found it really interesting and kind of poignant for the audience that I have, because if I'm talking to a bunch of men 35 plus, and you say therapy, what, you know, their usual response is, oh, no way. I don't do that. Right. And talk a little bit about that and kind of how you teach people to think about that and approach that.
So therapy is a way to get out your emotions in a safe place where you don't end up carrying them and pushing off of somebody else. I heard somebody say this. If you don't transform your trauma, you will transmute. I had therapy on Monday about my divorce and feeling like a failure and trying to, you know, my man, hey man, what happened? Why is this life this? Now, I'm in a much better place than I ever was, right? Because I look at the end of it, like, you know, I was not with the right person. It wasn't meant to be. And sometimes it's hard to own that. It really is. And my pastor, who actually is the pastor for the retired Raven chapter players, a friend of mine, Corey Smith, Corey said, Marshall, going through a ton of emotions right now. This is normal. You have to process it. You know, I love my girlfriend. It's still like, you know, you have to process what happened because of the marriage. And so what I hope people that listen to understand is that therapy is not something where you have to go and spill your guts out, if that's what you don't want to do, to kind of get what you need to go. It's all about you being able to say what you need to say to work through everything. Like me, I asked my therapist some pretty tough questions on Monday about relationships and where I'm at, and say, oh man, no, like, this is totally normal, that's acceptable, you're at this place, you know, you're gonna, so I told him, I said, man, look, I had that hard conversation with my girlfriend. I was like, I always want to call another girl and hang out with her and make that, and he's like, well, yeah, that's what you could do, but like, what's that gonna do for you? Like, is that gonna do anything easier? He's like, no. I'm like, no, but it's not. So, you know, what I find in therapy is it's another way, another outlet for me to talk to somebody that is trained in how to help me through full emotions and hard times, make decisions that aren't what I call rash. So, again, look at therapy in that regard. You should say, okay, let me come up with an open mind, with an open heart, and let me say, you know what, let me try to work through my problems. And once I did that, that's when things got better.
And how do you contrast? Yeah. So my wife and I, we've been to, I don't go to personal therapy now. I have in the past. I have some coaching, which I want to ask you about, but we've gone to 5 or 6 times over the course of 28 years as what we call it as tune-ups, you know, where it's like, hey, we're facing this challenge. Our kids are 25 and 28 or 25 and 23, 22. When they got ready to leave the house, we weren't sure kind of what that future looked like. So we went and did some counseling there to kind of talk through it, kind of figure out what the next steps were. We've actually done an on-site, like dedicated week-long, you know, therapy retreat, which I highly recommend if you ever need to go through that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's definitely something that can make a huge difference. And I think men in general are kind of afraid of it because they feel like, yeah, like you said, you got to go and spill your guts and all that.
Yeah, you got to open up. And most men don't like to open up. But I learned from my dad, if you're a man, you can open up and it's fine. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's really, you know, be who you are. You know what I mean? And just, you know, let those emotions out to the degree that you want to. But you have to keep them balled up inside. It internalizes, it causes stress, it causes anxiety. And I think my dad had me in therapy, and my dad didn't do therapy, you know, for after his divorce for a short time. He stopped. And I think my dad, he died from pericarditis. I think my dad really died of a broken heart, and also the fact that he carried so many emotions with me from being married to my mom, and dealt with that fully, to trying to figure out how to become a better provider, to be engaged with somebody to make myself through. I mean, my dad just had a lot. Boys taking care of him, you know, and I think that was hard for him being back to take care of us, but we had to pay his money. My brother bought him a car, I helped pay his mortgage, you know, I helped with his money and all these things. And I don't think my dad ever really learned how to deal with all that. So, I'm feeling during all that pressure, during all that stress, he died at 57, right? Wow. And so, yeah, he's young. You know, and so, all these things, I feel, along with he had some obesity, stuff like that, but I think my dad never got help, never internalized what he needed to do to feel better about what he was in life. And I think that will help. Health issues, things like that, really took me back. And so the NFL actually pays for our therapy, right? So, you know, we were pretty good. I was really looking at that important. But again, they want players to go and get help. They want players to be able to go and talk to issues and not be in a condition where they're always internalizing or balling things up.
Yeah, like in your dad's case, what I think a lot of people don't realize is that there is a physiological response to stress. And, you know, the big hormone they talk about is cortisol. And cortisol, you know, it creates all sorts of issues and, you know, actually makes you fat. That's one of the things it does, because that midsection for men, it actually contributes to the adipose tissue around your midsection. But it can also, it's just this heightened level of fight or flight that you don't even realize that you're facing. And so in your dad's case, and with so many men, it's like, hey, we're going to stuff that stuff way down inside. And unfortunately, it can fester. So you need that outlet in order to get that out. And I'm curious. I know you, in this other podcast, you had said that you grew up with a single father. I think our moms would have gotten along well based on what you said in just those few little minutes. Cause I have that. I actually had to kind of sever relationships with her because of that. But how did your dad navigate you have brothers, you said. So how did he navigate kind of walking you through this how to be a man process? Because we talk a lot about masculinity on here and fatherhood and husbandhood and manhood. How did he navigate that?
So he really was great at being our best friend, our provider, and our teacher. You know, just me and my brother, John, who's also NFL football player in the Hall of Fame. And we learned from him how to be self-sufficient, cook for ourselves, do our own laundry, clean up our house, do all the things, pay the bills, all that. We also learned how to be educated, learned how to respect women, how to respect ourselves. We learned about fatherhood. We learned about how to really be a great friend to people. And our dad just led by example. I mean, That's really truly what it was. I mean, he led by example. And what was really great is that my mom's parents, so my maternal grandparents, were close to my dad. They were actually closer to my dad than they were my mom, their own daughter. When our parents divorced, our grandparents sided with my dad. And that also showed me how to work with people and how to have a strong bond with people. Like I said, even though my dad was no longer the son-in-law, my dad to them was still their son-in-law. I mean, my grandfather was literally loved my dad to the end. Like, you know, they were best friends and they were great and all. Even when my parents divorced, my grandparents really stayed close to my dad. So my point is that, you know, my dad talks a lot about things. Example, how he interacted, how he carried himself, and that showed me and my brother how to go about doing things in that regard. You know, unfortunately for me, I don't have that relationship with my former in-laws, you know, which is fine, you know, I mean, no ill will, but I, you know, it's just, there's too many things that happen in our marriage that that's just not possible. And so, look, man, I don't want my daughter not sleeping, because I'm not that guy. But like I said, I've learned how to pass things. You know, I don't have to have a close relationship. I'm not going to keep my daughter from a grandparent. So I learned that from my dad. I learned how to, you know, compromise from my dad. I learned how to, you know, be a better, you know, listener from my dad. So my dad was really big, not just for telling us what to do, but showing us the action.
I mean, that's how you do it, right? Like teaching by example. And in your dad's case, which I think is so often true, he may have not practiced what he preached necessarily in terms of dealing with some of those emotions and kind of teaching you guys how to do that. As a kid myself, of being, you know, they call it adult child of divorce parents. But I learned or didn't learn specific things about marriage and fatherhood and those kind of things. And we've never been divorced. We actually had a time when we kind of started going down that road, but married for 28 years. What things, how did that shape your, because I think, you know, just statistically, half the people listening to this have probably, you know, either been divorced or a product of divorce. How did that shape your view of marriage, the view of divorce, kind of how that, or did it? I'm curious to that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I got married at 35, found out what was going on at 41, and I filed for divorce at 41, and I'm 42 now. It'll be final November 7th. So I really wanted to get married. And when I filed for divorce, because I was the one that filed, right? And what's crazy, right, is that I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to be another. And here's the funny thing, right? It's not funny. The truth is that there's a lot of eights. So my parents got divorced in 1988. They started that process. I was eight. I met my stepdaughter, Ava, when she was eight. And then my daughter was eight. When I filed, the theme of eights. So in reality, what was really crazy is that what being from a divorced household, I was super scared because I didn't want to not be around my daughter all the time, right? I didn't want to, you know how to don't work with my stepdaughter. I knew I was probably going to stay close to my in-laws and all these things, but I looked at it, man, you know what? Life is short, right? You know, and my ex and I don't have the same love language, right? Mm-hmm. The woman I'm dating now, Glenda, she's awesome. We have the same love language. Our number ones are physical touch. Hers is mine. That works, right? That can work, right? Are we going to have conflict? Yep. We're going to have hard times? Yep. She had to send me a text earlier about a conflict when I was talking to struggling with, I'm going to text you back when I'm done. And tell her, hey, look, honey, it's okay. I mean, it's fine. I mean, you know, I'm not worried about that. You know, it's all on the same page. It's all that matters. But the thing is, I didn't want to get divorced because I had gone through it as a child. But now, being on the other side, and if you're listening to this, you're scared about divorce, trust Ben, that if you heard Ken say he started going down that road, they would save it. That's awesome. While I was trying to save ours, or we were trying to save ours, and then found out some things during that process. Stay.
Yeah.
Tried. I couldn't stay. So now she's wanting to like try to get things back, and I'm like, oh, you don't really want that. You just want the security of you being around. That's what she wants, and that's not what I'm here for. I'm nobody's security man, right? So the point is to answer your question specifically. Yes, coming from a divorced household was hard for me. You know what? I don't want to do this, but I need to throw the towel, the white flag.
And I think you pointed out earlier that really the secret to taking that and turning it into something positive or avoiding it would be to do what you said, which is what you're doing with your current girlfriend, having those hard conversations and really being open and honest about, you know, how I view marriage or how I view this relationship and how I view long-term commitments. My youngest daughter has been through a series of just terrible boyfriends. We didn't like any of them, but which happens. But she's now dating a young man that is on, you know, he seems to be just absolutely perfect, really similar to how I treat my wife. He treats her. But at the same time, they're starting to have these conversations because they've been dating for a while to say, well, how do you know, and they're early 20s. How do you view kids? How do you view long-term stuff? How do you view traditional, you know, relationships and roles and all those things? So,
that's awesome.
So I think having that is super important. I want to be respectful of your time. What if you had the if you were going to sit back and just talk to the average everyday guy about like three or four things to really focus on in life in order to maximize what they're doing in their lives. And in the way we put it is to be, you know, be the best you were made to be. Give me a couple little nuggets there. And I know it's very complicated and broader than that, but I'm just trying to get a takeaway and be respectful.
I'll give three takeaways. One, if you don't have one, hire a coach. A coach will help you see things you can see. Number two, be somebody that's always active, understanding, based, listen to, understand, not to respond. And three, be a man of empathy and compassion, right? It's very important. At the end of the day, if you're a man that's like that, for example, I had David Archuleta on our podcast, right? Great guy. He came out as gay a couple years ago, and I said, you know what, David? I have compassion for you because you were holding it in for so long. I'm sympathetic towards you because not a fact of the game, the fact that I've held things in too for so long with like how I feel with my divorce. I had to kind of keep things to myself for a little bit. I don't ever go against what happened, but I couldn't say anything because I was going through it. I had to hold things back about, you know, where I am or where I was in dealing with my first business, you know, kind of things like that. Like when that happened, I didn't have a chance to talk about how I was going through kind of the bankruptcy and trying to go through that process and worry about these things and that thing. So I've been at points in my life where I've had to hold things back and not talk about it because it was something that could cause more damage to me later on. So I said, man, I'm very sympathetic to you in that regard, and I'm compassionate towards you because it must have been hard for you to feel that for 30 years and then come out. I mean, look, good for you. Way to live your life. Way to be, you know, just who you are, man. And that energy can really help us because people said, wow, you really interviewed him well. And at the end, David started asking me some questions, and I could tell he was very relaxed, and he was very much like safe to talk. And that was, we've been like 25 minutes, right, Kevin? That was a 48-minute just David kept talking. He kept talking. So the thing is, as a man, right, don't have a coach. Yet. Two, be an active, understanding-based listener that is just to understand, not respond. And as a man, show compassion and show empathy to others. If you do that, that's when great things happen. That's just my perspective.
No, I love it. We were talking about empathy yesterday with my wife, and I think it's something that people, you know, more people lack now. And it's the difference between empathy and sympathy. The empathy is that, I mean, it goes as far back as it can. Walk a mile in someone else's shoes.
That's it.
Really understand. Cause if you can empathize with someone and really kind of put yourself into their position to try to understand, cause I always talk about everybody has a history. So if you meet someone that's a complete jerk, whatever you want to call them, there's a story behind that and how they got there and what they're facing and all of those factors. And so really being able to empathize and take personal responsibility along the way. Marcus, I appreciate you. How do we find you? Obviously you do coaching and I'm sure you're well in touch with tons of other coaches as well. So how would people find you and how would they explore that?
Great question. Thanks, Kevin. They can go to Marcus or www.marcus360.com or our website, www.marcusogden.com, and connect with us. Send me an email, marcus@marcusogden.com. I'd love to connect with you, chat with you. We're all about helping people move past challenges, move past obstacles to achieve fulfillment and success through our coaching, consulting, speaking. And of course, we also too have, Kevin, the Marcus Ogden app. You go to like your app store on your iPhone or your Google phone or your Samsung, whatever you have, go to the app and type in Marcus Ogden. Our app will pop up. We have exclusive content on there. You can follow our podcast. You can keep up with what we're doing. So again, you can go to our app, Marcus Ogden, Marcus360.com, or MarcusOgden.com is our website, or to shoot me an email, Marcus@MarcusOgden.com.
That's awesome. And I'll put those links in the bottom of the show notes as well. I'm excited that I follow your podcast now, so I'm going to go back and listen to some of those. This podcasting thing's an interesting animal. One of the things that my wife has said is you've gotten to be such a better listener because by nature, I'm not a great listener. So to be able to have these conversations and honestly, the best part for me, I'm a small podcaster, and still trying to grow, but to be able to have awesome conversations with people like yourself from all across the world is a real blessing to me. So I appreciate you taking the time to do it. And, hey, good luck. I'll be following and just, point in fact, I'll be meeting with my coach this afternoon. So
good. Have a good talk with him and keep pressing forward, brother. Keep moving forward, keep moving the yard mark down the field, and good things will happen.
All right, brother. I appreciate it.
All right.
If you're looking to really maximize your life and become the man you were made to be, head over to maxedoutman.com and get your journey started today.